Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is a show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together. Hi there. You know what? We had a slight problem with our system, so we're starting a little bit over again. So here we go. Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about being successful. Now, it's been pointed out to me, because we actually announced the topics a little ahead of time, that we always talk about being successful because we talk about, well, how to reach a successful outcome, a successful conclusion. But let's think about it in a more specific manner today, shall we? Yes. And as we often do, since this is not a scripted show, it goes where we take the conversation, we're going to ask, how are we going to define success? Yeah, how should we define success? What is it that is the defining moment where we go, yeah, we've got it. We've achieved what we set out to achieve. How should we define success within our context, within the context of a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution, even a workshop or a seminar, anything where we are reaching consensus and getting people together to reach a successful outcome? How should we define that? You know what? This is kind of funny because this wouldn't have been my top pick, but it's a good point. I think that our most chosen topic for how do we define success is monetary. Yeah. It looks like you guys are thinking about getting paid and having an outcome where we've negotiated a settlement, some sort of money. Yeah, and that's a real good barometer of success and a very, very clear one to see. You've either got it or you don't have it, right? Yeah, so it's a real good way to look at whether or not we've been successful, whether or not we've had an economic success. Right? Yeah, so money. A lot of people are talking about, I'm going to say, is achieving the goal. We've set a goal for the group, a goal for what we are doing, and we've achieved it. So I'm going to say achieving the goal would be another one, right? Mm-hmm. Looks like we're going to do strong group dynamic too, and I certainly agree with that. We've been successful because we've created a strong group dynamic, a group that might even be able to work together again on different issues because we're finished with this one, or maybe on something ongoing that's related to the one that we just did, right? Yeah, this was successful. Now let's take the next step. Let's go a little further together because we're good at it, is really why. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are talking about the civility rules. How do we find success? Well, maybe it's because we don't have to actually write the civility rules down anymore. People just do it because it's become natural. It's become the way that we're going to interact with each other and how we're going to really proceed, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. The civility rules. Yeah, and I think the one that we're going to end off with, because I'm kind of lumping everything into categories so that we can talk about them within our hour. I think that the one we're going to end off with is going to be that your reputation has been enhanced, and that's how you know that it's been successful. People go, wow, Sue can really handle stuff. She's a good leader. She can get a group together. In fact, it's kind of my specialty to come in when groups are in crisis. Failed is kind of a big, nasty word. But let's just say they haven't been real successful. How's that? Yeah, they failed. And they need somebody to come in and be the new sheriff in town and really get them to work together and to be reasonable, to be capable of going forward, right? Right, yeah. So, yes. So let's take those as our topics. And let's start out, as we often do. We'll just go through them, talk about them, and see how we can do this. So let's take money first. With that we've really, it's a good barometer when we get down to signing for checks, for actual payments, right? Yeah, especially if that's really what the issue is about. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, Elizabeth and others, are talking about negotiated cost. And that's, I deal a lot with multinational corporations and sometimes even with unions. And that's what you're doing. You're really talking about compensation. All right? Not even always just money, but compensation, the whole package, so to speak. And there's kind of a big difference in what people think they should pay. Mm-hmm. Because the people being paid, of course, would like lots. And the people paying, of course, would like less than lots. Yeah. And so there's kind of a friction there, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a negotiated cost, right? And negotiated being perhaps even contracts. Mm-hmm. Remember that oftentimes we as professionals are really, what I tell people I am actually, is I'm the sentence on the bottom of the contract, and so are you, that says that you must go to alternative dispute resolution before you go to court, right? Yeah, a lot of us are that sentence. And that means that we're going to look at the terms of the contract too, and interpret them, and reach consensus and negotiate. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an interesting point. Quite a few people, Hussein and others, are asking me, how come the contract's not specific in the first place? The answer is, it should be, right? It shouldn't be so hard to interpret a contract. It's in writing. And an attorney usually did it, or some sort of a professional. If not in the United States, an attorney usually does it. But some sort of a professional that does it. Maybe even it's a standard contract used by employers and unions and things like that, right? Yeah, there's a lot of just, if it's not real complicated, there's standard clauses. And even if it is complicated, there's a lot of standardized clauses. And then you kind of make them specific. So it is a contract, it's a written thing. But, all right, if I've written it or somebody competent has written it, there's less to argue about because I'm fond of writing it clearly and really putting down what the parties want and what they have agreed to, right? Now, sometimes the contract is, and sometimes the contract's unclear and that's what you're talking about. But sometimes, in fact, frequently in my world and possibly in your world too, frequently contracts are only for a time period, right? They expire. And you need a new one. And things have changed. Circumstances have changed. What's common in the industry might have changed. Common compensation, right? Right, yeah. Sometimes the laws have changed. In the United States, we're kind of in flux with some laws concerning employers, right? You've probably seen that on the news. We have a new president. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't make any difference what you think about President Trump. He's it. And so you have to think about what's coming down the line and what's the law now and like that. So it's all a matter of negotiation and reaching consensus. Yes. Yes, this is true. I do a lot of employment law in that sense, in the sense of how much are we going to get paid, and sometimes even more importantly, what are our benefits, and what are our employment guarantees. We can't be, we have to be fired for cause, for example. You have to show cause, and not just because it's a cost saving. Well, cost saving might be a cause, but there's compensation to go with it, right? Yeah, and not just because, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So anyway, these are all negotiated items. And yes, when we get done with it and everybody has voted, usually there's a vote, and has agreed, yeah, this is a real marker of success. I'll give it that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people, George and others, are saying that negotiated benefits are often worth more than money. Negotiated benefits, this is true on some jobs. Negotiated benefits are sometimes worth more than money. Or they turn into money, for example, profit sharing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and stock options and things like that. They have a potential to be worth a substantial amount. There is a certain amount of unknown in that, and that's taken into account. Because it's not really money, because you cannot sell until a certain time. You don't get your stock options, and then you get the stock, and then you can sell right away and make, I don't know, say $50 a share. No, you have to, there's a certain wait period, and like that, there's rules about it. Mm-hmm. Usually, at least. Depends on the contract, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a good point, too, that Ellen and others are making, that oftentimes you've got the success of having a new contract, a negotiated cost, a negotiated settlement, something to do with money, a negotiated payment to you, because oftentimes we are paid. I am, oftentimes. I do it as a profession. So oftentimes we are actually paid, and our participants might be paid. I've dealt with boards of companies, yeah, and, you know, the corporate board, and they're paid. They're paid a real nice amount of money, and quite frankly, so is the leader of the negotiation. That would be me. And it is, so perhaps that we had in mind that we are paid and how much. So that's an indication of how good we are. It's a good way of looking at it. I must confess that I don't turn it down as far as that goes. Yes, and people are saying that is making a precedent for future negotiations. What we do now for our, say, 4-year contract, which is a common amount of time, will set a precedent for next times, because we've already have reached a level, and then it will be incumbent upon the, well, oftentimes a union or some sort of an organization to try to do better the next time. Yeah, so you've set a precedent, you've set a bar. Mm-hmm. And that's a very good point, and one that one should remember, if you know what I mean, so that you think about it. Because it's not just this time, you're going to come back in 4 years' time, for example, if that's what the term of the contract is. And, well, you have to think about if you've said it clearly and whether or not there are measures that prevent it from being too large of an increase, and the circumstances may have changed. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a precedent for future negotiation. Truth statement. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about the contract terms. Mm-hmm. Suki and others are talking about to clarify the contract terms. Yes, oftentimes we are not the party that wrote the contract. Sometimes the contract is repeated in its basic terms from the prior one, primarily because the terms have been agreed upon, but now circumstances have changed. So to clarify the terms of the contract, hopefully somebody did that when they wrote the new one that we're now talking about, and also there should be a clarification of expectations. It might not even be in the contract. It might be in a separate document as an addendum to the contract. Yeah, it is true that in the United States, an expectation in a contract is not exactly legally binding. You couldn't take the expectation to court. But it is a negotiation point for us, for reaching consensus, because it is the expectation with which the prior contract that we're now negotiating, a new one, for example, was signed. And we look at the circumstances at the time of the signing, and we look at the circumstances now. Yeah, it all factors in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a lot of those kinds of negotiations, and there's usually an expectation, really on both sides, that if the intervening time, if the circumstances are good and business is good, I mean, if we're having a Great Depression or something, all bets are off. But say that we're chugging along and business is pretty good. There's usually an expectation that someone, that when they come back to do the contract, that there will be an improvement in terms, an improvement in money, an improvement in benefits, or at least not the taking away. Right? Yeah. Because no union person, no employee representative, doesn't have to even be a union, wants to go back and explain how you don't got that no more. And it hasn't been replaced by anything that, even if you don't think it's better, is at least a horizontal move. Right? Yeah. Because sometimes things get changed, but you've got to trade for them, because that's what's known as reaching consensus. And you have to think about the other parties and that they have to go back to someone who's getting the benefits and the pay and explain to them the new terms. Yeah. So, so money does indeed factor in. It factors in as negotiation. It factors into what we are paid. People are asking if leaders usually get paid a percentage. No is the answer. I would not do such a thing. Okay, as an attorney, I am bound by ethical rules. I think that's unethical because it gives you a monetary interest in jacking the amount, right? Right. I mean, you wouldn't do that because you're an ethical person as a human being. But it won't look well when others, outsiders, look at it. No, I think you should get paid a real fee. Hourly, maybe, because attorneys do get paid by the hour. This is true. Generally speaking, well, maybe that's not true. I was going to say, generally speaking, you get compensated by the project. I've done it both ways, but never with a commission of any sort. Yeah, I never have because it makes me less impartial. If I've got a monetary interest in having the cost be high because I get a percentage, I'm not an impartial third party anymore, am I? I'm somebody who would like to see more money, naturally speaking. Yeah. Even if that's not actually true of you, don't steer clear of relationships and steer clear of ideas where it could be possible that someone would think that. Yeah, I'm very, you have to think about how it appears, too. Like a politician, you have to think about how does that look to the people that are looking at it? How does that look to the public? Does that seem good? If the answer to that is not so much, maybe you should take that into consideration and go, well, I don't think I'm going to do that because it's not so much good, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, negotiate an actual payment and not some sort of a commission. I think that looks like impropriety. I'm sure that people do it, but I still think it's impropriety. Yeah. Some of you have done it for private. A lot of you are not in the United States, so that makes a difference law-wise. If you are not an attorney, that might make a difference because we're bound by a different standard, a higher standard. If that is how you are being paid by commission, by a percentage, and you can't negotiate otherwise for some reason, because I would really try it, I think that you should reveal it as transparency. I think I am so wary of that. I think it might even be something that you'd have people, the participants, sign off on, that they understand that to be true, but it will not impede your impartiality. Yeah, because it just kind of looks ugly. Mm-hmm. And that's something, I'm big on transparency, and I think that's something to reveal and be able to prove that you revealed it, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's go on to the next one. How do we measure success? How do we define it? By achieving our goal, right? Yeah, by doing it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about the goal itself. And a lot, we've talked about this prior shows, right? Recipeforpeacenow.com is the website where we can all look at prior shows. Mm-hmm. And the main thing is to define your goal, because clearly you have to know what you want so that you know what you're working towards and you know when you've got it, right? Right. So you need to know what it is that you want. What's your goal? What is it that you are hoping to achieve, right? How are we achieving success? How will we know when we've got it? Well, it'll look like this. We'll have negotiated these issues and we'll know what we're doing, right? Right, yeah. So you need to define what it looks like before you can go towards it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But after saying that, of course, yes, this is a lot of folk are going, but you need to modify. Yes, if you define it when you start out, it's an idea, right? And then, but you don't write it in stone. You want to see where things take you, see the circumstances. We might have to modify. Our goal at the moment may be too far in advance. We may need to take 3 steps first in order to get closer to our goal, in order to be able to reach it. We may have to work on it and go, well, let's see. I think, and then fill in the blank, because our goal might be too many steps away. We may have to take a bunch of steps first. Or it may change because of something we find out. Outside factors, circumstances might change. So your goal needs to be defined, but not incapable of modification. And remember that modification is not failure, for heaven's sakes. It's just that. It's modification. It just says, you know, this is what we wanted. This is what now we want. And it's related, and it's maybe even different, but now we understand better what the circumstances are because we've done some research. We have worked together. We've really thought it through. Yeah. So the goal is something that can be modified. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're talking about a mission statement, I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't like to have a lot of time spent on it if it's going to cause us to argue over words, each word in the mission statement, and like that, excuse me, took a sip of water. I'm not certain that all groups need a mission statement. In fact, I'm kind of certain that they don't. I guess because it's not one of my priorities as the process. Some groups, however, do, because they really don't know why they're there. They have to solidify what it is that they want. Something is bad. All right, we accept that as a statement. But what do you want to do about it? What is it that your goal? What do you want? What would be the best thing that could happen? What do you want is the question. And sometimes that's harder to answer than you think it is. Yeah. What do you want? What will satisfy you? Yeah. It seems like a simple question, but believe me, friends, it is not. It's really not. It's not a simple question at all. It's something that you have to think about and decide. What do you want? What is it that you need? Right? Yeah. Yeah. So that would be the mission statement. Some groups can do a mission statement easily, some not. If you get all through with making a mission statement, reaching consensus on it, make sure that everyone understands that it's that along the way it may be modified. If your mission statement is very general, it's not going to do you much good, right? If your mission statement is very specific, that might be okay, but if you need to modify, it's going to be kind of traumatic, right? Yeah, it depends what you're doing. Right. Yeah, when we're talking about achieving our goal, Mohammed and others are talking about outside influencers. We talk about them a lot at Recipe for Peace Now. The reason being is that they're so important. The outside influencers are those people who your participants kind of report to. Maybe not even real technically, specifically, because it's their job to do so, but they're people who have influence over your participants, and they're going to go back and they're going to talk about what's happening, and then they're going to get these people's opinions, and they're going to really make a difference in their consideration, in their thinking about it, in their help. And that is very, very important to understand. I like to invite these people in if I possibly can. Now, sometimes they won't come, if you know what I mean. They want to be anonymous. Sometimes they want to be anonymous to the group, but they will come and talk to the leader. That's fine. Always remember that you need to be able to indeed, if you say something is anonymous or off the record, it must be so. And you can't go, well, that was so important that I breached my word. No. If it's off the record or anonymous, you cannot breach your word ever as leader on anything, but especially on that. I like to invite the outside influencers in, though, and I like to talk to them, even if they just come to talk to me, the leader, with their participant with them. I like to see what they have to say. I'd like to know why, right? Yeah. We're going to break out the 5W questions, aren't we? Of course we are. Because how are we going to achieve our goal if we don't? For those of you who are new, and also it's always good to say, the 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. How will you know how come your participant has that worldview, has that opinion? Who, what, where, when, why. Do you break them out all at once and just kind of pepper spray the participant and make them run off? No, of course not. But you break them out as needed, the 5W questions, so that you can gain some empathy. And remember, empathy is not agreement. It is understanding, right? Empathy is not agreement. People make that mistake. Empathy is understanding. I understand where you're coming from. And then I would like to tell you my side, and we can have empathy for each other even if we never actually agree or we want whatever the goal is for completely different purposes. That's fine. Completely different purposes is acceptable. Nothing wrong with it. As long as we understand that we're on the same page for the goal, that's the important part. Yeah. So, outside influencers, that's where the 5W questions come in especially well. because you'd like to know who else is impact your successful outcome. Who has a word in it that we don't see here that's not talking to us? Mm-hmm. And maybe they'd like to. I kind of encourage it. Mm-hmm. Should we go on to the next one, which is a strong group dynamic? Create a strong group dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are saying there needs to be clearly that the rules need to be clearly defined, as well as the process. I don't know if the process is the rules or vice versa, but what we're doing and why we're doing it needs to be clearly defined, so that people really have confidence that A, you know what you're doing, that's good, and B, that we are working on it and we're working in a logical, organized, gonna get there type manner. Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, clearly defined process. I like transparency too. We've talked about this. I never keep secrets. It's too hard and somebody's gonna find out. Transparency is very, very important on all of this so that your participants know where you're headed. Mhm. Yeah. Yes, people are talking about kind of a list of items that you need to completely have the skills and have the group dynamic that really works. Mm-hmm. And I think our vote is for clear instructions. People, pretty much everybody's saying that. But also, and this is very important too, you have some rules like the civility rules, which we're getting to, I think, next. And you've got some... You've broken out the 5W questions, so you know something about everybody. Mm-hmm. But one of the third, or maybe even higher than that, rule about a successful group dynamic, a successful outcome, is to really have the freedom between the participants and also between the participants and leaders and leader and participants. But it goes all the way directions. You need the freedom to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Without being ridiculed or looking dumb or anything like that, you need to be able to ask questions. The leader needs to ask questions. The participant needs to ask questions. Yes. Exactly. George and others are saying not only ask questions, but ask for help without being embarrassed about it. I would much more like you to ask for help than to do something that you've worked on and really, really put some effort into. That's just not it. It's not helpful. It's sideways in some way. Ever had that? Yeah, people have put a lot of effort into something, really a lot. And they misunderstood the darn question. I mean, it's just... They circled around like little chipmunks or something, and they didn't get to the bottom of whatever it was that we needed, right? Right. So you need the freedom to ask questions and the freedom to seek help, right? Because if you ask a question, you might need some help in getting the answer, because if you knew how, you wouldn't have asked, right? Mm-hmm. This is where experts come in. This is why the leader has kind of a team of experts to be called in. When you become a more experienced leader, you will find that you get kind of the same basic cases in the same field because people find out you're good at it. And they go, oh, well, that's a job for Sue. Let's call her in and have her figure it out and get it straightened out and tell us what we need to do. Which is delightful, and it also means that you've got some specialized experts that you can call. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the experts would like to remain anonymous, right? I want to get involved, but you can call me, and I'll give you my opinion and be helpful, mm-hmm. Which is a big deal, because give me your opinion and be helpful is mighty fine. Mm-hmm. So you've got the ability to ask questions, and the ability to ask for help and to see if the advice that you've been given, people think it's right. Because sometimes you get some advice, you go, really? And it's sincere, and it was maybe even given by an expert, but you go, really? Maybe I should bring this to the group before I act upon it, right? Yeah, let's bring this to the group. And you should be able to. The group should be supportive so that you're able to bring your questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Thomas and others are talking about cooperation, even though for different reasons, but you want the same result. Yeah. Sometimes groups, people, cooperate because they want a certain result, but the reason they want it is very different than the other people. But in the end, they all want it to look the same. Include anybody, because we're all in the room. Mm-hmm. Yes, people asking for an example, because that is kind of a weird concept usually. Well, not always. I suppose the majority of the time. You see people who want the same outcome for basically the same reasons. They're all on the same page. But sometimes not. And sometimes a need, a negotiation, goes for a really long time, right? And so people go in and out of it also. Mm-hmm. An example is in the United States, marijuana. There was a big push, especially, well, it's been a big push for maybe 20 years, probably more than that. And there's a big push to make marijuana legal. And different kinds of people and different kinds of organizations sent their representatives to see if that could be done, right? You had to go federal. Federal is above state. State is above local, law-wise. Mm-hmm. And people were in the room, but they wanted the same result, legalization. It was a clear goal, a clear result. The question was how to do it, right? But you had different interests. You had growers. You had the medical community. In fact, quite a few different groups from the medical community, because there was glaucoma and HIV and migraines. There was like six different medical disabilities that could be helped with marijuana, right? And it is, and then you had people who want to use it recreationally. You had people that wanted to sell it to everybody. Different kinds of people. You had clinicians. You had people that were just kindly, right? Yes. So this is all different reasons for wanting the same result, the exact same result. Yes, and it took some imagination. They actually went and bypassed the federal, because it couldn't be done, and got some of the local ballots, took a vote. And so some places in the United States, marijuana is legal. But not every place. Still hasn't been done, right? Right. Yes, new administration. I know it may change. But it was just an example of different people, different interests in the same room wanting the same outcome. Mm-hmm. Yes. And, yes, the next time also you got cooperation, and when you've reached the goal, capable of working together again, is what quite a few people are saying. And Farouk and others are saying, when you've reached the goal, you have success if you're capable of working together again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, capable of working together again. Here we go. We did it good the last time. Didn't think we would. We're very different. But we really got along. We were an effective team. Hey, nothing wrong with that. Yay, team. Let's keep going. Let's find something else that interests us that we can cure. Mm-hmm. Or help. Help. Cure is kind of a big word. I figure you're cured if you don't have the symptoms anymore, mm-hmm. even if they could come back. Our next topic is civility rules, because we're going to run out of time. And for those of you who are new, because we talk about them all the time, the Recipe for Peace Now has very few rules. Things that you must do in order to be a successful leader, because it's up to your circumstances and to a certain extent your personality. Mm-hmm. I lead in a rather smiley, pleasant, let's all do it rah-rah manner, right, with enthusiasm. It's not everybody's style. It doesn't make it better or worse. It's just a comment that it's not everybody's style to lead with extra overt enthusiasm, for example. But the civility rules permeate everything, yes? And when we start out, we announce them, don't we? Because that's part of our process, a part of our transparency. And then we give people little notebooks and things to keep track too, because it is a way to put down one's thoughts without just having to spill out your mouth, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the process. Everybody writes it down. We will be civil. As we go along, some groups don't need to be reminded again. It is inherent. Mm-hmm. Some groups do. They have to be reminded constantly, especially like a core of bullies in the group. Yes. So this is the $24,000 question, right? People asking about enforcement. Because you can say the civility rules. You can model the civility rules, which, by the way, as leaders, we are required to do. You're a good example. Yes, the civility rules, basically speaking, say that we will not be rude to one another. Did I not say that? Yes. We will not be rude to one another. We will take turns. There will be no bullying, right? There will be no rolling of the eyes, no sighing audibly, that kind of stuff either. We will not be rude to one another. Mm-hmm. People ask about the enforcement of the civility rules. Because you can talk about something and they seem positively fabulous, but how are you going to enforce the civility rules, right? Yeah. A lot of people talk about peer pressure. Michael and others are saying that what other people in the room, how other people in the room react is all important, right? If you've got somebody, however, who is trying to breach the civility rules, and for one reason or another, maybe a personality flaw, maybe they are interested in not having the group succeed. They've been sent by somebody, maybe. Mm-hmm. How are we going to stop that? How are we going to enforce the civility rules? Because it's one thing to say them, and they're perfectly nice. But how are we going to enforce this? Mm-hmm. People go for peer pressure. The other people in the room are going to get kind of tired and say things like, get off. Stop that. That's a good point. A lot of times someone's trying to hijack the situation. So peer pressure might work, but they don't care. This is when we actually go above. First of all, we as leader have authority. So you're the first line of defense. We will enforce the civility rules. We will announce that someone is going beyond the civility rules if that is necessary. It is one of the reasons we have food in the room, because the potluck makes a good time out, right? If things are starting to go uncivil, let's go have a snack. And then the leader can actually go over to the offending party, shall we call them, and see what's up, what's the matter, and find out what to do about it. Mm-hmm. Ask the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. But that's if you've got somebody down there, because, you know, somebody oftentimes is very experienced in the group, right? And the civility rules need to be enforced. How about a supervisor? How about whoever it was that hired you to be the leader, right? Mm-hmm. How about dismissal? Mm-hmm. If it can be done. Sometimes people think they can breach the civility rules because they think they're indispensable to the group. Not everybody is, if you know what I mean. Most people can probably be replaced. And if they can't, this is the part where you make the speech, usually in private, but if it's getting egregious, maybe not, about we're going to act like human beings. We're going to act more civil to each other. That's inexcusable behavior. You're not a two-year-old. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Except, of course, because the leader models civility, we will not lose our temper and we will not raise our voice. No. We will take someone aside during the potluck, during the food, because we've called the time out, and find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. That would be good. Mm-hmm. Oops, let's move on to reputation, which is our next one. We've got about 10 minutes left together. And I know you guys like me to get to one of the recipes. It's kind of like, oh, I'll try. So the other thing that we talked about when we started this conversation was, well, how do we know we're successful? When our reputation is enhanced, right? Yeah. And one of the ways to enhance our reputation is really to enforce the civility rules at all times, because it makes for a better group, right? That's how you make the good group dynamic that we talked about, by enforcing the civility rules, by saying, you know, that's inexcusable behavior. Let's work on this. And really making it a convivial atmosphere. And the thing about the civility rules is they need to be enforced immediately, as in you don't wait for things to get out of hand and then try it. Immediately, consistently, so we know it's really a rule, and fairly, has to be for all sides. Even if you secretly think that one side, one argument is a lot better than the others and is really the way to go, everybody gets their turn. Everybody gets to present their argument. Everybody gets to participate, right? Right. And the civility rules apply to all of us. Leader the most, because of course the leader is the one who's going to model the civility rules. You can't enforce what you don't do. You can't. You can't enforce what you don't do. Therefore, we're going to do the civility rules. Right? Right. And your reputation hangs on it, because people will know that when they join with your group, when you're the leader, that it will be a convivial atmosphere. Everyone will be heard. Everyone will be civil. That we will stay on track. That the process will be clear and that we will understand what is going on. Right? These are all important things. You have to remember that you have to treat everyone like you want to be treated, right? And is very, very important to your reputation and to the fact that you want people to call you back in, that you're the one to see. You're the one that gets it done within a reasonable time period, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your reputation is, as quite a few of you are saying, your reputation needs to be carefully guarded, right? Yeah. A lot of people, Michael and others, are talking about the appearance of impropriety too. Your appearance, not your physical appearance, although it should, of course, be hygienic and professional, but your appearance of whether or not you're impartial, you're a third-party impartial. That's why when we started this conversation, we talked about money, and I was kind of adamant about not getting a commission, not getting a percentage, because it makes you appear to be less impartial, even if that's not true. Even if you reach the most fair and the lowest cost and like that, people, it's got the appearance of impropriety, even if it's not, right? Mm-hmm. And that goes to your reputation, right? Yeah. And your reputation should say, money-wise, she costs some more, she's more expensive, but she'll do it faster and better than anyone else, so it's worth it. Yeah, faster and better than anyone else. She's worth it. She's worth the extra cost, the extra effort, right? Yeah. And that's the highest compliment anybody can give you, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really worth it. It may be more, but it's really worth it. Mm-hmm. So that's your reputation. and your reputation in your field also of expertise. It is true that you do, after a while, get kind of a reputation in a certain field that you know what you're doing. And then people go, you know, Sue handled that for our company. You should call her in. Here's her number, right? And it's similar. And you do indeed kind of get a knowledge of certain experts in that field, too, that you can call in and say, hi, you know, this is what I need, and could you give me some advice? Or give my participants some advice, right? Yeah. And so that also makes a difference, that you want to have your reputation as really being an expert. Mm-hmm. People are asking how to actually get the reputation if you're new in the field. The answer is that you should indeed make yourself known in whatever area you're in, whatever field of expertise you're in. One of the ways is to volunteer for different groups. Mm-hmm. And then you will meet people in your area of expertise who will be impressed by you. And also, especially if you're new, it is interesting to see how other leaders do it. Yeah, it's interesting to see the process. Interesting to hear what the other participants are saying, right? Interesting to listen in. How is that done? Is that a good idea, leadership-wise? How do the participants think about it? Because you're a participant now, so they talk to you candidly. Because mm-hmm. you get together, you have there's a potluck, right? You kind of discuss things and roll your eyes and like that. Well, not with other people, but sometimes when you're having a private discussion, right? And then you learn things. You learn about different styles. I learn different technology oftentimes because I've been doing this a long time and I like to know what's out there. I actually still volunteer. I like to volunteer outside of my field of expertise because I think it's interesting, because I meet other kinds of people, because it expands my field of expertise, right? Yeah. And I like to volunteer for something I'm passionate about because it makes me enthusiastic. And you need to be enthusiastic as a leader and as a participant because you're giving the most valuable resource you have. You're giving your time and your effort and your abilities, right? Mm-hmm. You can also, yes, people are talking about shadowing. And we have interns, which is kind of shadowing if you're nice to your interns. Mm-hmm. Interns are called different things, but they are usually people, in our case, they're college and above. I don't know about high schoolers because they're minors and there's funny laws about it. But people that are in college and above, they're getting advanced degrees past their college education. They actually intern a lot, some of them with us, with Recipe for Peace Now, and they get college credit. They don't get money exactly, but they get college credit towards their graduation, and they get some experience. And that's the idea. You could intern, right? Yeah, you could volunteer, which would be the same as being an intern. You might be out of school, and you're not really in that program where you get credit, but you could volunteer and say, you know, I'd really like to. People are talking about shadowing, actually going with somebody who has a lot of expertise in the area and being allowed to go into the negotiations and really being a part of it and seeing how it's done. Maybe. I don't always let someone shadow because there's client confidentiality agreements and just even if it's not a written agreement, it is something to take into account. So if I let the interns shadow like on workshops and seminars. Mm-hmm. We use them as greeters and as people who sign you in and like that, and then they are more than welcome to come in and participate as full-fledged participants. Yeah, they're welcome to come and sit in and be part of the group and really think about it, and it's very interactive. And so it's a good learning experience. And it's a good learning experience because they have also been in on the planning stages and then they can see how plans modify. Yeah, because it doesn't always go according to script, does it? And if you've got a script, and I see this with people with PowerPoint, and some other kinds of questions have been asked, or it should go in a different direction, sometimes people can't deviate. And it makes for a really bad seminar or workshop because they're not doing something you're interested in, right? Yeah. So it's interesting to see how things change too, because they do. Yeah. And that's towards shadowing. That's kind of looking at it and gaining a reputation. You know, even as a volunteer, you gain a reputation for whether or not you're really enthusiastic and efficient, for example. And you're kind of intelligent, right? And you really think things through. Because that's a way to gain a reputation so that people want to hire you in the future, right? Right. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, we have run out of time and we didn't get to the recipes. And I apologize. I know this happens to us sometimes, but we've had such a lovely discussion that I hated to cut it off because it's rather important. And we will get to the nice recipes next time. Yes. At least, I hope so. At least one of them. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.